Thanks. So yeah, as said, that's what I'm talking about. And this is joint work with Hoi Kwan Lo, who's my supervisor. And the content is basically, it's in a couple of papers, with one paper and this one preprint, both from this year. So the sort of, well, I could have subtitled this an interesting trick with W states, but I thought this sounded broader. So, the outline. So to start with just a whole bunch of definitions, because to some extent this is rather dependent on how you define things, and what entanglement of assistance is, which, and what the previous results on that are, and then just some new definitions which are useful in explaining what's going on here. Then the new results, which are start off with a problem: can we get an EPR pair from a W state? And turns out you can in a particular way, and there's bounds on what you can do via that method. Then generalizing a bit beyond the W state, so the 3-qubit classes, the W and the GHZ classes, and some multi-party states. Finally, we go back and decide the definition is not actually as careful as it should be, and redefine, and get some new results for that definition, conclusions at the end. So the general question of interest is, if several parties share an entangled state and they want to do an LSCC operation to convert it to another entangled state or states shared between fewer parties, what can and can't they do? This is of interest in the broad sense just because, well, it's something you can do with an entangled state. It gives you an operational description of that state, and having an operational description of multi-party states is good because there aren't necessarily that many around. Somewhat more concretely, if you're thinking about, say, 3-party states and making 2-party states, we know quite a lot about what you can do with 2-party states. So if you can talk about how many EPRs you can make, then you have a sort of built-in operational description because you know what you can do with EPRs. So this is a sort of general question, and the specific points and address is, does how we choose the parties matter? And in various trivial senses, of course it matters. Making an entangled state between Alice and Bob is not identical to an entangled state between Bob and Charlie. Also, if we don't have a symmetric state, symmetric multi-party state, then we're going to be able to create more, in general, going to be able to create different amounts of entanglement between different parties. But it turns out how you choose the parties, and indeed whether you choose the parties, actually matters in a slightly more subtle way. So sort of one of the relevant measures for previous work on this is the entanglement of assistance, which is first proposed in 1998, defined as follows. For 3-party pure states, it's the maximum expected entanglement between the two of the parties, so in this case Alice and Bob, maximized over the decompositions of their reduced state. So more operationally, it's the highest expected entanglement of Alice and Bob after Charlie makes a measurement and broadcasts his result. So if you, which is not general LCC. So if you restrict your protocol, so Alice, Bob, and Charlie share a 3-party pure state. If you restrict their protocol such that all that can happen is Charlie can make a measurement and he can tell us and Bob what measurement he made, then the amount of entanglement they get is maximally is the entanglement of assistance. And somewhat interesting, it's sort of dual to the entanglement of formation, which would be the minimization over decompositions. So various properties of the entanglement of assistance. For the 3-party pure state, you can define it by reference to row AB only. So you can just calculate it from row AB. There are formulas to actually get it. So it depends what entanglement measure you're using, but if you use the concurrence, you can calculate it exactly for 2 qubits for the single copy. Or if you're using the asymptotic case, so you're talking about lots and lots of copies of a 3-party state and where you want to make entanglement between two of the parties, then you can calculate the rate at which you can do that. from 2006. So its use is arguably a bit limited because it's not a bipartite measure or a tripartite monotone. What that means is you can calculate it just by reference to rho AB, but it's not a property of the state rho AB because it's not something you can do with just rho AB. To actually achieve this entanglement, you need the three-party state. You need Charlie to do his measurement and make the communication. So so it's not a bipartite measure, and it turns out it's not a tripartite monotone simply because we've restricted our class of LOCC operations, so we can do better if we allow general ones.
I mean, you can compute it from the bipartite state. You mean it's not an operational measure? Like, it doesn't represent an operational task in the bipartite state, or?
It doesn't represent something you can do with the bipartite state. If you want to, you know, say you can, it's something you can, to do it, you need to have all three qubits. To get the entanglement of a system from the state rho AB, the state, you know, you need to have, Charlie needs to hold the purification of state rho AB and actually make the measurement and do the communication. So in that sense. Okay, so what if we do allow general LL60 operations? So people have considered this and given it different names, different contexts, the assisted entanglement or the entanglement of collaboration. So various properties are known for three parties. There's a formula for it. It's just the two parties you're distilling to, A and B, it's just the minimum of their local von Neumann entropies, if distillable entanglement is your measure. If you're using concurrence, then for a single copy, it turns out for a pure state that it's actually just equal to the entanglement of assistance. So, and we can't in general calculate that, but as I mentioned in the previous slide, you can calculate it for two qubits. And for greater than three parties, there's actually a general formula, which this is a specific case of, from Horodecki and Winter in 2005, which is that the entanglement of assistance is the minimum entanglement over any bipartite cut that separates A and B. So T and T bar are like just groups of all the other parties, and you minimize over those groupings. Okay, so that's sort of definitions these people have used before. These are ones we are going to use, which are not wildly different. So basically, we're going to use distillable entanglement as our measure, and we're going to talk about general LOCC. So we're going to find this quantity E sub big A ij, which so in the single copy case, that's just we have this pure state. We're going to do LOCC to make as many EPRs as we can between I and J, and it's the expectation maximized over protocols. And the many copy version of that, rather than the expectation value, it's the rate at which we can do it in the limited many copies. So we define this thing, and you know these definitions, you know, not claiming this is an exciting new measure, it's just for convenience. Calling specified entanglement, and that's very simple. It's just the assisted entanglement maximized over all possible pairs. So you know how much entanglement you can make for Alice and Bob and Bob and Charlie and whoever else, and you just take the largest number for any given pair. So what this represents, it's the most entanglement. If we pick a pair and make entanglement, and we can pick any pair we like, it's the most we can make. Okay, so what upper bounds this? Well, we know there's an exact formula for this, but again, using the Horodecki et al. Result, but a useful upper bound is we can do this, so it's larger than the second largest S local von Neumann entropy, and for a single copy, we can bound it using the concurrence of assistance. Okay, so Right, so something else we can do. So the procedure for all of this stuff we've been discussing is there's a whole bunch of parties, and we focus on two of them, and we want to make entanglement between two of them. But something else we could do is say, let's just make as many EPRs as we can, and we don't care who shares them. So Alice and Bob make some, Bob and Charlie make some, Alice and Charlie make some, other people make some if there's more than three parties. And all we want, we just want, and after we've made them, we add them up, how many we've got, whoever shares them, and that's our quantity. It's called E sub t, total entanglement. So yeah, that's just the formal definition. So making lots of EPRs, and then, okay, so this is in the many copy limit. So the single copy case would just be the expectation value. But again, this is the rate at which we make them. So to summarize all that, the assist entanglement is how many EPRs we can make between two chosen parties. The specified entanglement is the assist entanglement maximized over all possible pairs. And the total entanglement is how many EPRs we can make whoever happens to share them. Okay, so that was just definition, so on to some actual results. Okay, so so the original question was, the original question which sort of sparked this research was, what if we have a three-party W state share between these three parties? Well, what do we know about it? Well, based on the stuff we've been saying before, if we want to make an EPR pair between two of those parties, we can do that with maximum probability 2/3, and it's easy to see how you implement that. So if it's Alice and Bob, Charlie just makes a computational basis measurement. And if he gets a 1, then they're in this product state, which is no good. But if he gets a 0, then Alice and Bob share an EPR pair, which happens 2/3 of the time. So that'll saturate the bound. And if we have lots of Ws and we want to make lots of EPR pairs between Alice and Bob, we can do that at a rate H2 of a third, where H2 is the binary Shannon entropy function, which is roughly 0.92. And yeah, clearly the state's symmetric, so if it's Alice, Bob, or Bob, Charlie, or whatever, these numbers are the same. So if we choose two parties and we want to make an EPR pair, we can't do it reliably, even in the limit of many copies. It's not too bad, but it's not one. Okay, so what if we don't specify the parties? What if we just say, I want to make an EPR pair, I don't care who ends up sharing it? Slightly surprisingly, so this is stating it's a lower bound, but what we're saying here is that you can. You can always make an EPR pair between two parties if you don't choose them. So you can do a protocol such that at the end, two of the parties will have an EPR pair, but you don't know who they're going to be beforehand. Yeah, sorry.
Infinite version, so that means on average, right?
So that's the many copy rate. So for one copy, it's an equality because you can probably not do better. But that's, yeah, one thing we haven't been able to show is that you can't actually do any better than that for multiple copies. So for the multiple copy case, it's a lower bound. Single copy, it's optimal. You can show that as like, requiring, because the Schmidt number doesn't increase, so you can't, there's no way you can make more than one EPR. But for multiple copies, we haven't found a proof that you can't actually do better, although we conjecture that you can't. So what's the protocol for this? It's quite simple. So everybody with state one just stays with state one, and they all do this unit tree. So one goes to one, and you get a small rotation of zero to a third state. So epsilon small. So what do they end up with? This thing. With large amplitude, they've just still got a W, but we have this bunch of terms as well, and we've got some higher order terms. And then having done that, all the parties perform this prediction. So they just check to see if they're still in the 0-1 subspace or not, or if they've got two. So what can happen? Well, the most likely thing is that all three parties are still in the 0-1 subspace. They get outcome A, they're just projected back, and they have a W again. So you repeat the protocol. You keep repeating the protocol until something else happens. So one other thing that can happen is that one party, Alice, for example, actually gets out exactly one party, so I point out, gets outcome B, and Bob and Charlie still get outcome A. And then that's what you want, because if Alice has a 2 now, she must have had a 0 before, and if Alice has a 0, Bob and Charlie have an EPR. And that's exactly what you get. Or what can happen is two or more parties get outcome B, which is not good, they just end up with the product state. But in the limit of small epsilon, the probability of this happening is negligible relative to the probability of this happening. You can show more rigorously than I've done here. So in the limit of many rounds and small epsilon, so if you do tiny little unit trees and are willing to do it forever, then two parties will get an EPR. But one person happening to measure a 2, you've got no control over who's actually going to measure it, so the two parties are random. If this is, well, might help the clarification, there's actually quite a simple classical analog of this situation. So say we have a sort of what you might call a classical W, so we just have three bits, 1, 0, and 0, randomly distributed between Alice, Bob, and Charlie. So two of them have a 0, and one of them has a 1. So the person who has a 1, you know, they all look at their bits. The person who has a 1 knows that the other two of them have zeros, but the people who have zeros, they don't know what the other two people have. And one thing that would show them this is if one of the people with a 0 stood up and said, I have a 0, and then the person of the other two, the one with a 1, would know the other had a 0, and the one with a 0 would know the other had a 1. But what you want to do, you want to make it so that this standing up and announcing you have a 0 happens in such a way it doesn't give any. So what we're trying to do is generate a secure bit here. As a sort of analog to an EPR pair. And we want to do it in such a way that an eavesdropper doesn't know anything about what the secure bit is. So we want whoever stands up and does, we need whoever stands up and announces a 0 to be random, because if it's deterministic, then the who stands up gives the eavesdropper some information. So the way we do it, one way to do it, each party checks their bit, they see what they have. If they have a 0, they secretly pick an integer j dashed, which is in the range 1 to k, where k is large. And in each round, which publicly announced, just meaning that, you know, the sort of timing information can be publicly announced, parties with a 0 privately generate a new random integer. And if the one they got matches the j dash they picked at the start of the protocol, then they're the person who stands up and says, I've got a 0. If they're given a round, no one gets that. You just repeat. So it's like everyone's rolling a dice with lots and lots of faces, and the person who rolls, say, the first person to roll a 6 is the person who stands up, and if they have a 0, stands up and says they've got it. So when the protocol terminates, the two remaining parties, they either have 1, 0, or 0, 1. Those two parties know what they've got, but neither an eavesdropper nor indeed the person who's stood up and made an announcement knows what they have, so they share a random bit. Because we can see that this is, from the point of view of an eavesdropper, there's nothing in this protocol to distinguish the two people who didn't stand up. So they've got no information about which of these two bits they have. So the limit of many rounds and large k in this case, so lots of faces on the dice, two random parties always have a shared secure bit. So this is this is something you can do if you're willing to keep going forever, which is not necessarily very useful. But actually you can do a very similar thing for finite rounds. The only difference of finite rounds is you increase your epsilon, or it's better to increase your epsilon, just because say you're doing a protocol and you have 10 rounds, to start with you can just do a tiny little unit tree and you might get lucky, but as you have fewer and fewer rounds left, it's it's worth doing a bigger rotation just to up the chance of getting an EPR, even though it increases your risk of two or more people being in state two and you get a product state. So if we say that the epsilon we use when n rounds are remaining is epsilon sub n, we just find the optimum epsilon is just 1 over n plus 1. And the probability of getting an EPR within n rounds is n over n plus 1, which means that for three or more, if you do three or more rounds, you're doing better than the two-thirds probability you had for one copy. And for 12 or more rounds, you're doing better than the 0.92 you had for multiple copies. So for a relatively few number of rounds, you're getting more entanglement out than you were if you chose the number of parties. So it's, you know, in principle, a doable thing. And it follows, you know, fairly clearly from this result for the W that, so we can say, as well as talking about making EPRs, we can say something about the kind of tripartite properties of the W, which is simply that we can get any 3-qubit state from at an asymptotic rate of at least a half simply by basically just making these EPRs and then using the teleport. So if alpha is the state we want to make, we do our random distillation. So in the limit of large n, Alice, Bob, Bob, Charlie, and Alice, Charlie each get n over 3 EPR pairs they share. And then each party uses those EPRs. So Alice, for example, uses n over 6 of these to teleport copies of alpha, the qubits from the copies of alpha to Bob and Charlie, and Bob and Charlie do the same. And the net result is that you get n over 2 copies of alpha. Of course, one thing which is important, and of course we don't know this just by saying that ET is at least 1. The one thing which none of the measures we're going to use capture, which is important, is this sort of structure. Because the reason you can do this, of course, is that the EPRs are distributed. So if Alice and Bob had all of them, then you couldn't teleport anything to Charlie. So who actually gets the EPRs does matter, and you can't just sum that up with one number. But you know, at least this result tells you something useful in the tripartite case. This in general, of course, is not optimal. I mean, trivially for the W, it's not optimal. But for example, for the GHZ, you can do a bit better. There's another protocol that will give you about 0.64, I think. Okay, so we can do this strange thing and get out lots of EPRs. So what upper bounds, how many EPRs we can get? So we used this result in 2005 for a general LSEC on pure tripartite states, which just relates, okay, so I'm going to define that here. It just relates this ER, which is the relative entropy of entanglement, and the von Neumann entropy of the reduced states. And if we just plug in our random distillation to this bound, we get this, which gives us a bound on how many EPRs we can get. That's just for three states. For M states, for something more general, we found it's actually, we can extend a bit this result 2001 and show that the relative entropy of entanglement, the asymptotic relative entropy of entanglement, it provides an upper bound as well, which is, in general, it's slightly looser than the three-party bound, but it's good for M parties. Yeah. And if we actually apply this to the W, we find we get the same result using either of the two bounds, which ends up being log 2 of 9 over 4, which is roughly 1.17, which at the moment is our best bound for how many EPRs you can make from a W, if you just add up all the ones that everyone has. But you know, we conjecture it's 1. It's worth noting that the asymptotic relative entropy, people don't have an exact value for it for the W. So we're just using the non-asymptotic upper bound. But there is a lower bound on this upper bound, if you see what I mean, i.e. there's a, so we know that this value is at least 1.03, which means even if we did know what it was exactly by itself, it wouldn't be enough to prove our conjecture of this thing being 1. So. Yeah, just knowing the value properly is not enough to show that. Okay, so that's the W. Well, what other states can we look at? Well, if we're thinking about 3 qubits, the GHZ would be clear sort of candidate. So for states, and we now have this relative entropy bound, and we can consider, so this is slightly more general, so this is a GHZ-like states where the coefficients are arbitrary, and people know what the asymptotic relative entropy for that is, and it turns out to just be H2 of mod alpha squared, which is also what you can distill out between two chosen parties, so there's no advantage. So, so you can get, if you've got lots of GHZs, you can get out as many EPR pairs between two parties you pick beforehand and by, if you just don't care. So clearly, this random distillation is not a phenomenon that always occurs. There are certainly exceptions. So more general states. And just okay, so we know the well-known result that you can divide pure three-qubit states are in two classes, the W class and the JHZ class, and a single copy of a state from one class can't be converted even with probability, even with some finite probability, to a state from the other class. So interesting to say, okay, is there any, can we say something about the classes in general when it comes to this random distillation? So what sort of protocol might we use for something more general than the W? Well, without claiming it's optimal, a sensible sort of protocol to pick. So if we think about what we did with the W, in a sense, with the W, we knew that if one party measured a zero, the other two had an EPR. So we did this slightly funny thing which kind of forced at least one of the parties to measure a zero. So we can do a similar thing here. We can just, we pick a basis such that Alice measuring zero corresponds to Bob and Charlie having some, you know, a larger entanglement than if she picked one at least. And then we perform the W distillation protocol and just try to force the measurement of zero, which we can do, but and of course, unlike the W, which had these nice symmetry properties, for this arbitrary state, every time a round fails, in general, these coefficients are going to change and we're going to lose entanglement. So it's not as simple as just keep on going till it works and then you're fine. So what we really want to do is calculate the expectation value for how much entanglement we get if you succeed on the first round or the second round or the third round and so forth, which is hard to do with the von Neumann entropy. But fortunately, it's reasonably straightforward with the concurrence, and S is convex in Q, so we can use that as a lower bound on the amount of S we get. So the nice thing, so if the state's symmetric, if we can calculate, if we just say we're applying this protocol, which is also totally symmetric, and if we say we apply this protocol, and at the end, Bob and Charlie have this much entanglement, then there will be, you know, if Alice ends up measuring the zero, then Bob and Charlie have this much entanglement, then there will be equivalent outcomes for Bob measuring zero or Charlie measuring zero, where the other two have that much entanglement. So if we have a symmetric state, it's nice. We only have to do it for one party, and at the end, what we get will be at least three times that. It's a lower bound just because there might be a better protocol, but we can do at least that well. So it's reasonably feasible to calculate. And if we have, again, it's not claiming it's an optimal protocol, but we can consider non-symmetric states by just putting a filtering operation on top to make them symmetric first, which at least lower bounds what we can do with these things. So what we find, so this is a general W class 3-qubit state you can represent this way. And we find that, okay, apologize, that should be a strictly greater than. You can always do better by random distillation. So for every state in the W class, you can get out more EPRs than by not picking the parties than you can by picking them. So it's strictly greater. We already know that's not true for the GHZs because we saw examples of those states, including the GHZ itself, for which those numbers were equal. And there it, we find there isn't a general, so, but it might be that for nothing in the GHSA class, if they're ever an advantage, but that turns out not to be true either. That's just not particularly interesting state, but it provides a counterexample. So for the GHSA class, sometimes there's an advantage to random distillation, and sometimes there isn't. Okay, what else could we consider? Well, again, you know, sticking with W-like things, we can think about the multi-party W state. So M parties and consisting of M minus one zeros and the single one, and if we take all the permutations of that, so a W3 is what we've been calling a W so far, and a W2 is just an EPR. And if we apply the same protocol to that thing, now we do have these nice symmetries that we had before. And it turns out if you apply this to a WM, what you get is a WM minus one, randomly shared. So one of the parties measures a two and drops out, and then the rest of them randomly share a WM minus one. And if you keep going, of course, you'll get an EPR. Okay, why this is interesting is because if we make M large, well, this is the specified entanglement for this state is H2 of 1 over M, which tends to 0 as M gets very large, whereas the total entanglement is always greater than or equal to 1. So for a W to the M where M is very large, for any given pair of parties, the probability that you'll be able to make an EPR between them is very small. But if you want an EPR, you can always do a protocol that will give you one. It's just random who gets it. So you can have arbitrarily small specified entanglement. That's what that's saying. So the off chance wasn't clear. So say you start with a W to the 6. You do the protocol, one party drops out. Get a W to the 5. Another party drops out, and so on and so forth. Keep going. And finally, you've just got two parties, and they have an EPR pair. Okay, so generalizing a little bit more, we can talk about these symmetric Dick states. So these are symmetric superpositions of all states of m qubits where n are in state 1. So a 4-2 is this. So the W state would be a 3-1. And these again have the nice symmetry property that we can, if the protocol fails in the non-spectacular way, so if we use it in limit of small epsilon, so it just means that everyone projects back into the 0-1 subspace, then we have it as before, we get exactly what we started with, and we can do it again. So we can do this sort of forcing a measurement of 0. And if we do that, it's similar to the case of the multiparty W. So a 4-2 state, it would send to a 3-2 state. Of course, there's no reason we couldn't do the same protocol, but just swap the zeros and the ones. So we're effectively forcing a measurement of one, and that would take a 4-2 to a 3-1. So in general, which it's not terribly, we can do any of these. So we can take Mn to M dashed N dashed, or all this. All this means is that if we want to, at the end of the protocol, we can swap all the zeros and the ones if we want. So under these conditions, we can certainly do it. For lots of these, this isn't possible if we pre-choose the parties. Basically, if M dash choose N dash is greater than M choose N, then it's not something we could do between chosen parties, but it still works. So we're talking about multi-party states, so we can't sort of assign a measure so easily, but we can certainly say if we choose the parties, we couldn't do this. Okay, so unfortunately, well, so the results up till now are true, but we should be a bit more careful with our definitions, because we've been not explicitly, but sort of implying that this condition that our total entanglement is greater than our specified entanglement means something interesting is going on. But that's not really, certainly not always the case. So if we consider this state, so Alice and Bob have an EPR, and Bob and Charlie have an EPR. Then total entanglement is 2, but specified entanglement is 1. So if we add up everybody's EPRs, which is what we were doing before, we get 2 of them. But of course, if we pick any given pair, at most we're going to get 1. But there's nothing interesting going on. It's just a result of how we do our counting. So a better quantity to consider is what we call ER&D. So, okay, so for a general LOCC, which takes us from pure state psi to pure state psi f with probability pf, each of these final states has a specified entanglement, and ER&D is the maximum over all those the maximum over protocols of that expectation value. Yeah, this probably doesn't clarify it very well. The maximum over protocols expected maximum over pairs assisted entanglement. So it's just a different kind of sort of post-selection. Well, actually, no, I mean, it's implementing post-selection rather than just adding everybody up. So before, what we were saying is, you know, we don't care who makes the EPRs, we're going to add them all up. Now what we're saying is, after we've done our protocol, we're going to find the pair who has the most EPRs, and we're going to, and their number of EPRs is what our measure is, and then we're going to take the expectation value of that and just maximize it over all the possible protocols. So now we're at the end, we are only counting the amount of entanglement between two parties, but we're just not specifying beforehand what the two parties are. So there's no more adding up Alice and Bob's and Bob's and Charlie's entanglement, so we no longer have this problem. Incidentally, the results up to this point, like for the W, and they're still fine under this criterion. But in general, you can find exceptions like this. So just to recap the definitions, we've seen these three. So random entanglement, how many EPRs we can make for LCC between a pair of parties not a priori specified. So now we do have a pair, as opposed to just adding up everybody's, but we don't choose them beforehand. Okay, so now we've got this new measure. The question is, can we have ER&D is greater than ESP for multiple copies of states? What I mean, so we were sort of talking about multiple copy measures and asymptotic measures in the context of the W, but what we were really saying was just, well, certainly our best protocol was just I have one copy of the W, Alice and Bob get an EPR for another, Bob and Charlie get an EPR for another, Bob and Charlie get another EPR, whatever, and add them all up. But to really say we're doing we can do our sort of random distillation on each copy and then just do that over and over again. What was more interested in is there a kind of random distillation property that the multiple copies themselves have? Or in another sense, if I have lots of copies of the W or whatever, and I want to make as many EPRs as I can between some pair, does it matter whether or not I choose that beforehand? Which is a slightly different question. So the simplest example, what happens if we take two W's? Well, analogously to before, if one of the parties measures a zero on both W's, then the remaining parties will have two EPR pairs. So can we make that happen? Well, we can be naive and we can do the same protocol again, except we're now rotating our zero zero state into two rather than just zero. But we can see this is going to this is going to have the same problem that you have with general states, in that we no longer have this nice symmetry such that all the coefficients, none of the coefficients change relative to each other. We're going to lose entanglement as we fail at doing rounds. We can use the same calculation we used for the general state and just see what we get. So for the specified entanglement, it's just twice what we had before in the asymptotic limit, so it's 1.37. If we do this naive protocol, we find that we just beat it, but it's incredibly very, very marginal. Also, we can see that if we continue with this naive protocol, it's very quickly not going to help us at all. You can see that because, roughly speaking, so the probability for a party to measure a zero is 2/3. If we have n copies of the W and we want them to measure a zero on every single copy, that's going to go as 2/3 to the n. And the fact that we're not specifying who does it at most is going to give us a factor 3 advantage. So we're very quickly going to lose any kind of advantage in multiple copies. But maybe we're just doing a stupid protocol and there's something better we can do. But as it turns out, there isn't, in the limit at least, there isn't. So we find that as n tends to infinity, these things just become equal. This is maybe, well, I should just explain how we can show it. So this certainly isn't the proof, but this is the outline of it. So the result from the professor in 99, which basically just showed that you can't, in the limit of many copies, you can't even probabilistically increase your distillable EPR pairs. So that's a slightly stronger result. So the usual result is, you have a given expectation value in the limit, but this is just saying even if you're willing to gamble and sometimes do better and sometimes do worse, the probability of doing better tends to zero. And you basically need to have such an increase in S for advantageous random distillation to happen. And this is sort of, there's some kind of intuition here, which is that basically for the single copy case, you're taking advantage, or you're forcing an unusual outcome to happen. So you're sort of forcing this thing that only has 2/3 probability. Whereas in the many copy case, you can't force unusual outcomes because the outcome is always the expectation value, and you can't beat that, which may or may not make it more intuitively satisfying. So random distillation is really, it's a finite copy phenomenon. So finally, and not particularly in the redefinition, but it didn't fit anywhere else, the result from much earlier that you could actually do this thing in a finite number, you could do something interesting in a finite number of rounds, implies that maybe you could do it experimentally, which hasn't happened, but currently in talks with the Rainer Blatt's group, Experimental Quantum Optics, the University of Innsbruck, who are doing very nice things they make really nice W states in ion traps, actually big W states, I think up to 8 qubits, but we're just looking at the 3-qubit case. And in principle, it ought to be possible to implement this protocol. So very briefly, just how. So obviously this isn't a W state, but this is just thinking about what happens with the qubit. So when the, if we imagine a qubit's just sitting here, so R0 is the S, and R1 is one of the Zeeman levels on this D. There's the calcium ion in the trap. You do a pi pulse, which takes S to a different one of the fine levels, so this D dashed level. So if you like, I mean, you can't do direct analogies all the way through. Basically, the 0 is now D dashed, and the 1 is still D. So then we do our small unit tree, and we rotate. We do a small rotation of the D dashed, which is now the 0, back to the S. Yeah, it should probably be the other way. So now S is serving as our 2 level. So having done the small rotation, we now just need to do everyone. So we're doing this on all 3 ions. So now we just need to project and see if anyone's in state 2, i.e. are they in state S? And so you fluoresce on this SP transition and see if, you look for fluorescence on this SP transition and see if you get any. And that constitutes a measurement of whether something's in state 2 or in the 0-1 subspace. So in principle, you can implement it. And then after you've done that, so after you've done your projection, you rotate your D dash back to S and start all over again if you need to do another round. Very provisionally, which is why it's not on the slide, but it looks like you can probably do, given the errors and so forth, you can probably do up to about 10 rounds of this, and sort of simulating it, it looks like there ought to be. So it's not a perfect W state, so you need to use the concurrence as a measure because it's mixed. But it looks like you can get a better concurrence out doing random distillation, or you ought to be able to, than you can prove is the upper bound for chosen parties. So it should be doable. So finally, okay, out of time. So the conclusions. So for LSEC conversion of m-party states to fewer than m-party states, whether you choose the parties matters. And I was saying at the beginning, you know, this is, you know, slightly more subtle than in the obvious sense. So, you know, whether not just how you choose the parties, which is sort of clearly matters, but whether you actually choose them at all or sort of post-select them makes a difference. And so the example of that is you can reliably get an EPR from a W if and only if you don't choose the parties. So, yeah, I mean, say reliably maybe rather than eventually. It crops that, you know, it's not, so it's hopefully a bit more than just a strange tick with a W. You can do it with other things, other three-party states and states with more than three parties. You can get states between random parties at negligible probability in specified parties, so the multi-party W example. So, yeah, even you can have it so the probability of getting it for chosen parties is arbitrarily small, and yet still you can reliably get it between random parties. Relative entropy upper bounds this total entanglement yield. It's always advantageous for the W class, sometimes it is for the GHZ class. Is that the last one? Oh no, yeah, there's provably no advantage in the many copy limit. So yes, that's slightly dependent on how you define it, but basically it's a, as I was saying before, it's a phenomenon of finite copies of quantum states. So and just acknowledgements. So various people had useful discussions on this. Daniel Gossett, Martin Plinio, Andrew House, Matthias from Standor, Debbie Lone, and Andreas Winter. And then not all of them, but a selection of the relevant references. So thanks.
So one could consider a more general sort of problem, of which two problems you discuss are special cases. So the general problem would be that I pre-specify not which parties, but the probabilities that I get an EPR state or whatever state is shared between each pair of parties. So for example, if you pre-specify the probabilities were 1/3, 1/3, 1/3,
yeah,
that would actually be your W state case. If you pre-specified that they were 1, 0, 0, that would be the case where you try to get the particles, so that the EPR shared between two given parties. But you could also pre-specify that there was something else other than those two.
So the question of if you pre-specify the probabilities, what states would satisfy that?
Well, the question is then that's a more general problem that one could look at. And then the question is, I suppose the more general question you could ask is what's the formula for the most entanglement you can get given your pre-specification of the probabilities between.
Right. Yes. No. Yeah. Sorry. That's I should have said that. So I mean, in terms of extending this, you know, there's interesting things to say about other states and stuff. But as I was saying with regard to teleportation, yeah, clearly, well, one of what seems most relevant and not dealt with is this structure question that. You know, okay, you've got a different protocol, but how does it? What are the probabilities of going to these various parties? And so you can look at things like for a given measure, what distribution will optimize that measure for a given state, and how can you calculate that from the state? So I think this, you know, shows that there's more going on than just entanglement of the systems, but certainly to get a full picture, yeah, you want something like a sort of, you know, for a three-party state, you want like a sort of vector for the three pairs, somehow quantifying what you can do with that, because clearly, you know, what kind of resources you have, it's not just a function of how many EPRs there are, but who's got them. So, yeah.
And the other question I had was, is it clear that you need to have an arbitrarily large number of rounds to get one EPR pair randomly from W? Have you tried to find protocols that work after a finite number?
Not so far, that's a good point. I can't think, so you'd have, yeah, so for, yeah, I guess to prove whether or not it's necessary, you have to look at classical communication costs, which I haven't yet done with this protocol at all. But my suspicion might be that it is, but certainly, yeah, I don't know.
Okay, that it is possible to do the number of rounds?
That it is
necessary to have
that it's necessary to have a number of rounds, but that's, yeah, a guess, I suppose.
Questions?
Not that same thing.